Another big financial firm goes belly up.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace Podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson, and we will start in Cedar Falls, Iowa. That's the home of a brokerage firm called Peregrine Financial. 2 days ago, its founder and chairman tried to commit suicide outside the company's headquarters. He was unsuccessful. Last night, his firm filed to liquidate under Chapter 7 of the Bankruptcy Code amid accusations from federal regulators that Peregrine defrauded customers and hid losses. Marketplace's David Gura reports.
The Peregrine Financial Group said it had more than $200 million worth of its customers' money held in an account. But regulators discovered it didn't have anything near that. The account only had $5 million.
In the context of the size of the company, of Peregrine Financial, it is an absolutely enormous shortfall.
Jason Carrion is with the Economist Intelligence Unit. He says there are parallels here to MF Global, which also had a big shortfall. In that case, over $1.5 billion. Carrion worries a trend may be emerging.
It would not surprise me if more cases like this did come out.
He says this also points to a bigger problem, that federal regulators may not be well enough equipped to find shortfalls like these.
There is a lot of new regulation in the U.S. financial system, you know, as a result of things like the Dodd-Frank Act, but that usually runs ahead of enforcement, which is a lot more expensive.
The Commodity Futures Trading Commission, which has said it needs a bigger budget to police the futures industry, has asked a court to freeze Peregrine's assets. I'm David Gura from Marketplace.
Well, in Washington today, the House Agriculture Committee is set to take up the Farm Bill, which sounds like legislation that's all about farming. But in fact, about three quarters of it goes to fund food stamps and other nutrition programs. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
There's been an explosive expansion of the food stamp program. To understand why, you have to go back to the 90s and President Clinton's welfare reform, which trimmed welfare rolls. In 2002, to help those cut off, Congress and President Bush made it easier to qualify for food stamps. Since then, the food stamp program has more than doubled. Sheila Zedluski is a public policy analyst at the Urban Institute.
Enrollment was approximately 18 million people, and now it's about 46 million people.
That's about one in seven Americans. Many of them lost their jobs during the Great Recession. But why is the food stamp program in the Farm Bill anyway? Like most things in Washington, it all boils down to politics. Chad Hart is an economist at Iowa State. He says farm state legislators needed a way to connect with more urban members of Congress so the city slickers would support farm subsidies.
And the easiest way was through nutrition, talking about food programs, bringing the food that's produced in the countryside into the city.
And bringing Washington's political games into the barnyard. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading this morning, up a fraction of a percent in Hong Kong, down 0.5% in Paris, and down 0.3% in London right now. Here in this country, there's word that the parent company of American Airlines, which is trying to emerge from bankruptcy protection, is reaching out to other airlines in search of a merger. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow fell for a fourth consecutive trading day. It lost 83 points to close at 12,653.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
So the good news is we're living longer these days. The bad news is the older we are, the more expensive we tend to be. Which brings us to today's Money Matters segment. We're going to focus on the financial and non-financial decisions that families face when caring for an elderly relative. Joining us now to discuss is Marketplace's Adrian Hill. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Adrian, so many people face this problem. What are you supposed to do when you have an elderly relative who is having trouble taking care of himself or herself, but they don't want to make that move into an assisted living facility?
Basically, start talking about it and keep talking about it. I asked psychologist Dr. Barry Jacobs about this, and this is what he told me.
This is not a conversation that takes place once. This is a conversation that takes place multiple times, sometimes over months and years. Unfortunately, with some families, the move doesn't occur until it absolutely has to. In other words, some medical event has to have happened.
The idea is to discuss really early on what kind of care and life and lifestyle your relative might want and how best to get there. Now, you've also got to start talking or at least thinking about money at this point because these things are expensive.
How expensive are we talking?
Well, it depends on the kind of care you need and where you live. I asked an elder care attorney here in Southern California named John Lansing how much it'd be ideal to have set aside just to make sure all those costs were covered.
$500,000. If you figure that the cost of care for a nursing home is at least $100,000 a year, then $500,000 is a conservative estimate.
A conservative estimate? Well, how are people supposed to afford $500,000? Obviously, that's not the kind of money everybody's got lying around.
It's not, and a lot of people don't, which is why these numbers of unpaid elder care providers are as high as they are. Now, people who have the savings to do this or family members with income to pay usually wind up paying for long-term care on their own. There are also long-term care insurance policies out there, and there are government programs that can help. Medicaid can step in if you exhaust your savings. Medicare can also assist if you need medical help, but it doesn't cover things like assisted living facilities.
Marketplace's Adrian Hill, who will be hosting our consumer finance show, Marketplace Money, this weekend. Thanks a lot, Adrian.
Thanks, Jeremy.
And finally, CNBC has come out with its annual ranking of the best states for business. And number one this year is Texas, thanks in part to the state's infrastructure and low cost of living. Last year's top state was Virginia, which lost its ranking in part because of its clogged highways, which make it difficult for people to get to work quickly. California and Massachusetts tied as the best states for a business to access capital. And even though it was only ranked 19th overall, New Hampshire was number one on the quality of life list. You can see where your state stands at marketplace.org. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.